Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about lesson on mass. I've given previous lessons on light. I just have to think of something, and energy. These are concepts which we sort of tend to teach by association, declarative or nominative sort of teaching. We say that's energy, that's light, that's light, that's mass, and do it enough that we get a sort of understanding in terms of a linguistic understanding what it is. And in this way, and at the other extreme, you have a high on maths understanding of these things and an operative, operational understanding of these things, which is how you measure light, how you measure energy, how you measure mass. And so you've got the nominative operational techniques, the theoretical techniques, and what I'm going to do in this one is just talk about, just give it a general laid-back talk, as I've been apt to do, just touch on a few things. So they vary from the various ranges, but it actually just stitches together bits of information. So you can imagine there's a tapestry of information with different types of threads going in different directions, and I'm just going to pull out a thread and wind it through. So I don't know exactly how this fits in with the different camps of knowledge to do with mass, and there's also the historical viewpoint. So I'm going to start off pretty much trying to go through the minimum cognitive load. So I'm not going to mention the historical origin of it or anything to do with what it is or anything like that. Just start mentioning things which I think would be in everyone's knowledge base, and actually just moving it out in a way which doesn't sort of stretch your brain or the listener's brain too much. So the unit of mass is a kilogram, and that's got the unit of small k, small g. Now, a kilo, which means thousands, units which are big come from the Greek, and it's a small g, and g, gramma I can't remember, it's from the French Revolution, and so that's a cubic centimetre of water. That comes from the Babylonian times, that the measure of mass was related to the volume of water. That's an ancient thing that's been with us. But now it's changed, and is changing very quickly. So there is, I think, still artifact or archetypal kilogram, the big K. So there's a little lump of iridium, which is high density, and platinum, which stabilizes it, allows it to be machined. Iridium itself is very hard, so if you make an alloy, I think it's 10% platinum. Again, this is just wafting off the top of my head. I think I could. It's a cylinder, so you can actually just machine it down. They've machined it down to 1 kilogram, and that kilogram at the moment is, by definition, one with no decimal points out of it. If that kilogram loses weight, the entire universe gains. It loses mass. The entire universe. In real terms, and we'll talk about that in a little while. So if you get in there with a pocket knife and cut, there's this parrot I've talked about before. This parrot is right up next to me. Oh no! Oh come on! Leave me alone. These are very tame. All the birds around here, up here in the Blue Mountains, are very tame. Oh, leave me alone. Okay. Okay, so if you were talking about trying to keep on track, they're probably wanting to listen about mass, I'm sure. So if you were to get in there and hacksaw something off, say hack it in half, no matter what you did to it, that would always be 1 kilogram, and the mass of the universe would increase, and everyone would go around hitting equations. But perhaps later on this year, or by 2020, they'll move across to another definition of mass based on a much more fundamental, currency of the universe, which is Planck's constant. And we'll be able to measure mass I suppose with a light bulb and things like that. I'll talk about that a bit later. But the unit of mass is a kilogram, a kg, and there's a space. If you right now, you often see it in shops and stuff like that. They don't put the space, and they never put it in restaurants or anything like that. When they're putting it in Australia, you have to put out if you have a. I don't know, it's in fast food, not in a lovely restaurant. There's a little restaurant in the Sydney Opera House, the back of the Sydney Opera House. They're not forced to actually put the number of kilojoules in every food, but if any fast food thing, they're supposed to tell you the number of kilojoules involved in it. Sorry, I was just interrupted there by my kids coming out to do some painting. However, all around Australia, everything has to be marked in kilojoules, and I think I don't know whether it's 8,700 or 8,300 kilojoules is the recommended daily intake, and that's in front of every single counter, every deli counter it's got there. But much to my annoyance, there's not the space between the kilojoule, and sometimes they put a capital K and with, so it should be a small K, big J for kilojoule, going through there, just around the place. It is interesting that people tend to get the units right. They get the units right in blood products for sure, but everything else is just absolutely horrible. So that's kilograms. And this sort of naive story of what a kilogram is. A kilogram is the mass of 1 liter of water, roughly. A special litre of water, deionized water. Obviously, it's got nothing but the actual water molecules in it, and it's at standard temperature and pressure. It may even be at the triple point. That's gone by the wayside. What I want to do, and this is sort of part of the strange part of the thing of my brain hitting reset, I want to suggest a more sensible teaching method of defining the kilogram. Which sort of it's a little bit of work here, but it undoes a hell of a lot of work upstream in terms of chemistry. Now, one of the fundamental things, which is not pressure dependent, not state dependent, is not anything dependent, is that a kilogram, a certain amount of U is in a kilogram. A unit U is the rough unit of, when I say rough, not exact. Mass of a proton. So protons and neutrons change their mass ever so slightly, depending on where they're put. If they're put in nickel, is it nickel 63, iron 56? I can't remember which other most stable ones here. I have to remember the isotopes of it. And depending how they're doing, there's sort of like a point nothingness of a percent change in their mass. So you can change the mass of a proton or a neutron a little bit, a tiny little bit at rest. That is, okay, now this is going to upset you. I don't want to do too much, but if you decide to go for a run, with my kids coming up, can I help you guys? Sorry about that, I just got a little bit interrupted there. I'll get back to family life pretty quickly. I'll get this over and done with. But we were, and it's really good for me cognitively just to remember the line of my saying, because in the classroom you get interrupted all the time, you have to keep everything back on class. So here we said I just wanted to quip that if you go for a run, several things happen. You might lose some mass, you must respire carbon dioxide and the carbon leaves you as you breathe out. So you lose your mass by actually breathing out that carbon dioxide. It's a major method of losing fat. You breathe your fat out. How about that? That's one aspect of it. But the very act of going for a run means that, from my framework, your mass increases, because if you're going at any reasonable velocity, not the speed of light, you have a bit of mass dilation. This is just an idea that mass is something that you have to really worry about what frame you're in. So if things are moving quickly, they mass dilate, they gain mass.
and they actually physically do gain mass as measured by me, you know, or in any frame that you're at. We can go into that for a little while. But what I was saying is that while a litre of water is the practical thing we use, and the Babylonians have used, it's not really a good, it's a useful one for commerce and cooking, you know, so you know a litre of milk is going to weigh roughly a kilogram, and everything weighs roughly a kilogram. So what has it, roughly the density of water in that. You get your leg of lamb and you defrost it, or whatever it is, you put it in water. It may float a little bit above the level of the water. An apple, for instance, is less than the density of water, you'd hope, because it floats. And an egg, well, I think it depends. Yeah, if it floats, it's bad. And if it sinks, it's got a slightly higher density than water. Cans of Coke and things like that are interesting to put in. But we're saying for science, we've got to. So for science education, and scientists have another unit of mass, and it's the unit of a unit. It's got the symbol U, kilograms got kg. Symbols U is a unit, or if people are really squeezed, they call it a Dalton, because Dalton recognized that matter was made out of these tiny little spheres. But then it's a little bit of a tooth puller, teeth puller to actually go. It's got a capital symbol DA. But the actual unit of the U is a unit of a unit. And it's not named after anyone in particular. There's no one called Mr. Gram. There's no one called Mr. Unit. And that's the unit of mass of a proton. And basically, all matter is made out of protons and electrons, or neutrons. They're the two things. So you get a proton and electron, it's an uncharged, or a neutron, which stabilizes it all up. And so a kilogram of matter contains a certain number of protons and neutrons, a certain fixed number. So every kilogram weighs to within a certain approximation. There's just a very weak variance that uranium has slightly fewer neutrons and protons per kilogram than I suppose iron or helium. You'd be best off to say than iron, the most stable, one, and that's because it's got a mass defect. It's got something, so got slightly more because its neutrons and protons. Oh no, its neutrons and protons are slightly heavier. And they become lighter. The same number becomes a little bit lighter. So if we've got a kilogram of uranium, there's just a tiny fraction bit less when it turns eventually into iron. It's a huge amount of nuclear energy. It's pretty amazing to think of that very powerful energy. What I'm saying is that a kilogram of anything, pretty much anything you show to me, I can tell you, not the number of atoms, you know, that's a bit too hard, I have to know the chemicals, but I can tell you the number of, I have to know the isotopes, I could tell you the number of neutrons and protons in it, you know, pretty roughly, and the number is not incredibly difficult to imagine, and something really breaks my heart to see people talk about it. I think it's 6.04 by 10 to the 26th. Units are in a kilogram. Now I'm not quite sure on that. I've sort of, that's a photograph of the number I've got in my mind. But it's definitely 6 × 10⁶ units U in a kilogram. So 1 kilogram equals 1,000 grams, and 6 × 10⁶ little U's. Now, that's by definition. And 6 × 10⁶, you could say, well, imagine 10, imagine 100, imagine a and you go on. But there is a number which is easier, 600, you're down to 10⁴. And then a million is 10 to the 6, a billion is 10 to the 10 to the 9, and a trillion the Yanks have really finally won us on what a trillion is. A trillion is 10 to the 12. So that's 600 trillion trillion U's. That's pretty easy to say. So any kilogram you show in front of me will have almost exactly 600 trillion trillion protons or neutrons. End of story. Show me a kilogram of gold, a kilogram anywhere, a kilogram of spaghetti, a kilogram of feathers, a kilogram of iron, will have a different amount of atoms for sure, and a different density for sure. But the number of protons and neutrons making it up will be 600 trillion trillion. That's easy enough. I should make a rock song about that. I'll put it on YouTube and it will go viral for sure. So I've got 600 trillion trillion U's in my kilogram. I can't think of how you'd say it, but it's a very easy thing to go. And sort of when you've got that in your head, everything else makes sense. So it's, if I've got a kilogram of something, converts from one to the other, and nothing changes. If there's a nuclear reaction, the number of those U's get rechanged. If it's a chemical reaction, the groupings of the actual groupings change. The chemical reactions, the chemicals don't change going across. And that's the thing. So helium, in a chemical reaction, hydrogen doesn't go to helium. So four hydrogen plus a hydrogen plus a hydrogen plus a hydrogen goes to a helium. That's a nuclear reaction. Hydrogen plus a hydrogen plus a hydrogen plus a hydrogen goes to two H2 molecules. Four H's go to two H2s. That's a chemical reaction. But the mass is conserved because the number of neutrons and protons are the same on either side. And I think that really, really gets down to the actual basis of it. Now, this is around a 20-minute podcast, and that's all I wanted to really say. I think that's enough. I think if I sort of start to talk to you about the nature of mass and the Higgs boson and all the different ways we think of mass and the history of mass, it'll do your head in. And this is the general idea. This is why you have extensive plan. We're going to let scientists into the classroom, let them teach. And you know, our trade is to actually go in and actually say, perhaps if we do it this way, it'll be a little bit better. So again, for mass, a mass of 1 kilogram is 600 trillion trillion protons or U's. A proton is roughly the same mass as a proton and an electron is roughly the same mass as a neutron. So you get your mass, you can select. I think I'll have this mass made out of little packets, little party packs. You know, when you're at a party and you're giving your little kids a party and you make up the little lolly bags. In my little lolly bags, I'm going to have all these in little lolly bags of two protons and two neutrons, or two protons, two electrons, and two neutrons, if I want to all add it up. And that's going to be roughly, when I say roughly, not exactly, roughly 4U. And that's how I'm going to do do my lolly bags. And that means that you will be able to do 4 on 600 trillion trillion lolly bags, because you're putting 4 lollies. If you've got 600 trillion trillion lollies, I'm just trying to actually do some teaching here. So this is where you are actually using the fact that people can imagine lollies and have natural, an abnormal ability to follow the food. They can definitely follow the food because it means that they get the same fair share, and it's a whole lot of social machinery associated with food. So 600 trillion trillion lollies, you can select them to be half neutrons and half protons and electrons, and I'd say that. And in your lolly bag, you're going to make up 4 on 600 trillion trillion heliums, which are helium in every lolly bag of that combination of lollies put together. You may want to make a uranium-235. So for that, I'm going to have 92 protons and 235 minus 92. This is something where I'm still a bit woolly on doing the metal arithmetic neutrons. And they're going to have 600 trillion divided by 235, whatever it is, lolly bags. And when I say lolly bags, I mean atoms. And in the various party people, in the party exchanges, you exchange what lolly bags people have. They trade lolly bags. Really, basically, a chemical reaction is where lolly bags are traded. And if people are happy, cheer, yay, energy is given off. If people are sad and kills the party, you have to put energy in, you have to turn up music, and you have to load in energy to get that to happen. So that's just a very it's hard to say. It's not declarative or nominative. It's not operational. So you've got a declarative nominative way, is where I declare that, kids, this is a kilogram. Feel a kilogram. It's named a kilogram, and here's examples of a kilogram. A lot of people say that's a teaching concept. Operational, a kilogram is what you get when you do an operation. Then there's mathematical versions of it. A kilogram is what you get when you accelerate something by that much with that much force, or there's about four different ways, probably five different ways now that you can actually get it. Six different ways that you can actually define a kilogram. So a kilogram's a real sort of the central station of science thinking to go across. And what I've explained now is probably there's a historical example of that. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and this is probably a sixth way of quiet belief that we're not teaching. A lot of people believe that you should teach stuff which is historically consistent, and you obviously have to do that if you've got people setting a test where they only answer a certain amount of questions, and you've got high stress kids who can't think laterally, so therefore you've got to teach them the way that it's taught. This is sort of that sixth way, which is outside saying, hang on, let's just walk around the knowledge here and connect this with this. We're going to deconstruct it up the road in chemistry. Why don't we take some of that chemistry and put it back in here into the definition of the kilogram to make it a bit simple? So that's more, I suppose, an executive marketing, an MBA style of discovering a kilogram. So that's what you've had this episode. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.